Living beings are just great, crossing and dissolving boundaries all the time. And we're doing what we love naively and creatively unaware that what we're doing, well, sometimes things that just aren't or weren't done. Enter Leilani Munter, whose life as a NASCAR/ARCO race car driver graciously intersects with her life as an eco-activist. With over 75 million racing fans, she's not exactly preaching to the choir. Leilani will be speaking at the Arise Music Festival, which is happening in Loveland, Colorado, August 14th through the 18th. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries. Leilani, thanks so much for your time today.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oftentimes, with any movement, what ends up happening is a lot of preaching to the choir. And considering you're an eco-activist driving the NASCAR and ARCO racing circuit, there are most likely a few in those 75 million racing fans who are going to learn something by your presence.
Absolutely. That's sort of the basis for my program is reaching out to the people who maybe don't quite get it yet or aren't on board yet with the environmental movement. And, you know, really being a race car driver is what has given me a voice to get that out to a large group of people. My degree is in biology, and I'm obviously very involved in the environmental world. But the truth is, you know, without the race car, I wouldn't be able to reach so many people. So I really look at the race car as being a great opportunity to get the word out and get it in front of people that aren't necessarily on board yet.
I assume that you became a race car driver because you wanted to. It wasn't the thought of, oh, how can I reach so many people?
Yeah, you know, getting involved in the racing was sort of a bucket list item, actually, for me. I just went to a racing school. This is when I was in college for biology at the University of California in San Diego. And I've always been a little bit of an adrenaline junkie. You know, I've surfed and I've snowboarded, and I've been a scuba diver since high school. And one of the things on my bucket list to do was to drive a real race car. I've always had a bit of a lead foot, and it was really going to be something that I went and did and then probably never did again, but was able to, you know, sort of mark it off my bucket list. And I just happened to be quick that day, and there happened to be a race team owner that was there that saw me drive. And, you know, he kind of came up to me after I drove and said, "Have you ever thought about, you know, pursuing this as a career?" And, you know, of course, as a biology student, I didn't have money to drive race cars, but he pointed out to me, you know, that not only was I a second quicker than all the other drivers, but I was also a woman, and women are so rare in our sport that he thought that might, you know, give me a story and make me a little bit different from the other drivers. So it was really just that short conversation with him that made me start pursuing the racing. And it didn't really make sense to me at the time. You know, I think my friends and family probably thought I had lost it when, you know, I graduated with a degree in biology and said I'm going to move to North Carolina and become a race car driver. I got some pretty strange looks, and and I think people were wondering, what in the world is she thinking? But later on, it became very clear to me why I had done that, and I just didn't, you know, realize it, that you know, now as a driver that's involved in environmental issues, I am able to reach a completely new audience. And it really, the sort of light bulb moment, I guess you would say, for me was in 2006 when An Inconvenient Truth came out, and I was promoting An Inconvenient Truth on my website as a movie that I thought everyone should see. And this is my racing website, of course. So this is, you know, a lot of people that watch racing that probably weren't going to find themselves in the seats at An Inconvenient Truth. And I noticed that I had a lot of traffic coming into my website from a NASCAR forum. And I ended up going to that forum to see why I was getting so much traffic, and it ended up being a thread from someone who was pretty upset with me that I was promoting an inconvenient truth, and he was calling me all kinds of names and saying I was brainwashed by Al Gore, and there were other people chiming in to agree. And what happened was I noticed that there were, you know, by the time I found it, there were, it was a very long thread, and people were getting passionate on both sides. You know, some people saying, well, how can you actually judge this movie if you haven't seen it yet? And the thread had become pages and pages long. And, you know, by the end of the thread, they were posting graphs of the parts per million of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere. And that was the moment when I kind of sat back and I let go of the personal attacks on me, and I thought, wow, I just started an argument about global warming on a NASCAR forum. And really, since that moment in 2006, that has been my main goal, is to keep that dialogue going between the two sides. And so that's what I've been doing. So it's been, you know, it definitely ruffled some feathers in the start, but now people are much more receptive to it, and I've found a lot of NASCAR fans, you know, reaching out to me about how they can become more green. So it's great to see that change firsthand.
Well, I'm glad that you got support in all of those threads along with everything else. And, of course, we all know it's one thing for you to have become a respected driver in a male-dominated field. And a further complication you've just been mentioning, to race with an eco agenda. And I'm wondering, at this point in time, do car racing and the race to shift environmental policies and concerns have equal standing with you, or is one more important than the other?
You know, I think really the environmental stuff has become more important to me. That's probably what I spend more of my time on. And, you know, I've walked away from some pretty big sponsorships that were from companies that I didn't agree with what they were doing to the earth. So, you know, it's been hard, and that sometimes I'm, you know, sitting on the couch watching Daytona and watching a car that I could have been in but turned down. But at least I know when I do hit the racetrack, which, you know, may be much more infrequent than I would like, at least I know that I truly believe in what's on my car. You know, for example, last year we ran an ocean awareness car, the first ocean awareness car to ever run. And I had the colors of the Academy Award-winning film The Cove on my car. And that movie touched me deeply enough that I became a volunteer for Rick O'Berry and began going over to Japan to document the dolphin slaughter that they expose in that film. And, you know, we gave 1,000 DVDs of The Cove away at the racetrack, and I really feel like, you know, we got the word out. We got a lot of people to hear about The Cove that had never heard of it before. And, you know, we had something like 3 million people tuning in to watch the race. And the track announcer, I got him to actually watch The Cove before my race. So when my race aired and I ended up, my tire blew, he ended up talking about The Cove. You know, and so that was sort of the whole goal of it, was to get people to see the movie and realize that there was a connection between dolphin captivity, the dolphin captivity industry, and the slaughter taking place. And I think we were able to make that happen by giving those DVDs away, by getting, you know, the TV commentator to talk about The Cove. And that's sort of my main goal. So I at least, you know, truly feel deeply about what I carry on my car.
Oh, definitely. What is your experience with the other drivers when you have such an agenda going and yet you're racing with these high-profile drivers and it's a very serious sport, car racing?
Yeah, you know, I think there are drivers that appreciate what I'm doing and they may actually agree with me on a lot of the stuff that I do. They may not be vocal about it publicly, but that's really because they're trying to protect their racing careers. Race car drivers are very dependent on corporate sponsorships in order to keep their their race cars on the track and to be able to continue to race. And usually when drivers retire, you know, it's based on they're having difficulty finding the sponsors. So drivers tend to pick very neutral causes to get behind, you know, causes that aren't going to make angry any sort of CEOs of companies that might sponsor their car. So I may be down at the oil spill, and there were a couple drivers that I asked to come with me, the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, and they didn't come. And, you know, I understand why they did that. They did that because, you know, even though they may agree with me, they were maybe afraid that, hey, you know, a week from now I may get a call from Roger Penske to get in the car and drive the Mobil 1 car or the Shell oil car. And if I've taken pictures of me with Leilani, you know, standing at the BP oil spill with an FUBP T-shirt on, I'm not going to get that ride. And, you know, on the top levels of NASCAR, you're talking, you know, $25 million a year sponsorships. So it's a very, you know, money-dependent sport. And so I do think that there are drivers, and I know that there are drivers and many people in the garage that support my activism and what I'm doing, and they are on my side, but they may not come out and say it publicly. And I understand, you know, I took a big risk doing that because I felt strongly about it. And it certainly has kept me out of a race car in many incidents. You know, when when I work with marketing people in racing and I give them my list of companies I won't work with and I say no fossil fuels, no oil, no coal, no natural gas, no companies that test on animals, no companies that have meat or dairy products. You know, they laugh at me and they're like, good luck with that. I can't help you because you just nixed 98% of my clients. I've gone a very strange route, and in some cases it's hurt my racing career for sure, but that's okay with me. I'm fine with it. I would love to be in a race car full time, but I also know that deep down I'm an environmentalist, and there's no way that I'm going to be able to put something on my car that goes against those principles. I can't go to Washington, D.C. and volunteer my time working so hard to lobby for clean energy against the oil companies and then turn around and accept money from them to race. And I have had actually even companies that are not involved in fossil fuels. One was a beverage company, and I never knew why they felt so strongly. But I was called by a marketing person that said, look, these guys want to sponsor you full-time. It's a multi-million-dollar deal. They love that you're green. They love all your activism. But they need you to back off of the big oil issue. And I wouldn't
wrong
do
number.
It. It was right after the BP oil spill. I'd just gotten back from Louisiana from being out in a boat and seeing crude oil floating from horizon to horizon. And I said no. And I know the race team thought I was crazy because it wasn't even a fossil fuel company going on the car. It was a beverage company of some sort, but I knew that they were going to muzzle me from talking about big oil. So it goes even beyond just not being able to work with the companies down that line. I'm hopeful that that will change, but I don't know if it will.
Yes, it also goes deeper in other ways to the fact that if you are driving a race car, you have a whole team that works with you. When you go into the pit, you need good mechanics and good people to stand by you in that way, too. And so has it been difficult for you to keep a good crew together?
No, not at all. You know, the teams are mainly based around bringing sponsorship to the car. So, for example, when I drove the Cove car, that car was funded completely by donations from fans that had seen the Cove and understood the importance of getting the Cove out in front of the mainstream. And I had my whole race team watch the Cove. I said, look, you know, this is a cause-based car. This isn't, you know, we're not just sticking a product on the hood and hoping that people buy our product. We are trying to carry a message about this horrific dolphin slaughter, and in order for you guys to be able to talk to the public at Daytona, somebody asks you, what's the Cove about? I want you guys to actually be able to explain what the Cove is and what it means and why they need to watch it and why they shouldn't buy a ticket to a dolphin show. We had a big screening at my race shop a couple of weeks before the movie, and these guys all became passionate fans of Cove. And, you know, the same thing held true for I'm working on a vegan-themed race car right now where we want to have a vegan-themed car called the Vegination car. And then I was going to have a vegan chef at the racetrack actually cooking vegan food and giving it away to the race fans so they could taste that vegan food is really good and we're not living off of carrots and celery sticks. And I told the race team owner that, and they were fine with it. So it's great because I'm getting to not only sort of enlighten and expose NASCAR fans to it, but I'm also exposing people within my sport to new things. And I think they find themselves surprised when they watch the Cove. They were really moved.
Leilani, what do you see as a trend as far as what race car drivers are using for fuel? What are you using for fuel, and how does that compare with other drivers, and does it affect speed and amount of gasoline used? And
Drivers can't show up and use whatever kind of fuel we want. All of us use the exact same fuel. So NASCAR has been running on a biofuel mix. IndyCar has been running on 100% biofuel for many, many years.
Is that the E85?
No, 100%.
Wow.
They use sugarcane based, and then I think when they race at Iowa Speedway, they use corn based. But the great thing about them using, you know, a biofuel like ethanol is that even if it in the future, if it becomes like cellulosic ethanol from waste products like corn stalks and wood chips, our cars are already able to take the ethanol. So regardless of where the ethanol comes from, whether it comes from, you know, corn or sugarcane, or whether it comes from as a second generation biofuel of ethanol, our race cars can take it. So that's great to see. And the American Le Mans Series used to have something called the Green Racing Challenge, where, you know, all the race cars, that's a little bit different from NASCAR and IndyCar, where everybody has to use the same fuels because they're trying to equalize the competition. But in the Green Racing Challenge, people were using algae-based biodiesel. They were using cellulosic ethanol from wood chips. So people were able to get more creative. But I think that NASCAR will probably, you will see them, they partnered with American Ethanol in the last couple of years. I think once their Sunoco contract is up, which is next year, I think you'll see them on either E85 or E100. I think what's been holding them back from being on, you know, the majority biofuels or 100% biofuels has been that contract, that, you know, the 10-year contract that they couldn't, you know, you can't go up to an oil-producing company that's sponsoring you and is in a contract with you and say, hey, we want to take your fuel out of the race cars and put in these biofuels, you know.
Right.
They were paying to basically be the official supplier of NASCAR fuel.
Right. Well,
But American Ethanol came in as a partner a couple of years ago, and they started mixing in ethanol, so I'm hoping that they'll be on E85 or E100 in a year.
Right. I was just wondering about synthetic fuel, and I know it's quite expensive right now. Is it about $18 to $20 a gallon at this time? And I was wondering if perhaps with awareness going into the racing that the synthetic fuel could maybe develop some kind of new demand, which would demand some kind of new technology and maybe bring the price down. And then, you know, if there would be a way for all of the trash to be transformed into synthetic fuel, and then maybe we all could use it eventually.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's a great idea. And a lot of people don't realize that a lot of the innovation in street cars that you see have come from race cars. Like, for example, the rear view mirrors and the side mirrors. Those came from racing. Those were put into race cars to help the race car drivers be able to see. And then, of course, they realized, well, this is sort of a smart safety thing for everyone to have. And then they started to put it on the street cars. So there's certainly, you know, room for racing to serve as an innovator. You know, there's all these engineers working in racing that their entire job is to figure out how to get better fuel mileage, how to get more horsepower out of an engine, you know, using the same amount of fuel. So you put all those minds to work, and there's certainly going to be great things that come out of it. There's also an electric racing series that's launching next year. It's called Formula E, and it's going to be running with Formula One, and that's 100% electric cars. So I think you're going to see more and more, you know, racing is evolving and it's changing and it's becoming more eco-friendly because, you know, the whole world is starting to realize that the way we're living is not sustainable.
Exactly.
And if we don't evolve, we'll die. So racing is going to evolve or die.
Right. Is Elon Musk knocking on your door with a good electric racing car saying, hey, let's paint it green and send you out?
You know, Tesla isn't involved in any sort of racing stuff, but I am waiting actually for my Tesla Model S to be delivered. It'll be arriving here in North Carolina in about a month. And I certainly have already considered, you know, having my car on display there at the track is like, yeah, this is the race car that I drive when you see me here, you know, at Daytona on the weekend, but check this out. This is the car that I drive when I'm not in the race car. And look at how cool it is, and actually have the fans be able to see, you know, my race car or my Model S up close and see that, you know, not all electric cars are slow and not sexy. You know, some of them are super hot and have tons of speed.
Exactly.
And handle really well and are, you know, the equivalent of like a luxury electric supercar on the road. And so I'm really excited to get my Tesla.
I think
that's a lot of what the green movement has to offer. We have to be able to offer people the exact same things that they can get from the non-green cars without giving up any and sacrificing anything. With the Model S, they don't have to sacrifice, you know, there's a 300-mile range. They don't have to sacrifice infrastructure anymore because Tesla's putting in superchargers across the country. They don't have to stand there for hours waiting for the car to recharge because the superchargers can recharge to 300 miles in like half an hour. Or you can do a battery swap where, you know, in 90 seconds I can go from 0 mile range to 300 mile range in 90 seconds. I mean, that's quicker than you can fill up with a gallon of gas.
Definitely.
So, and on top of that, aesthetically, the Model S is beautiful. It's fast. It's got a great suspension on it. So now you're seeing people that are giving up, you know, Maseratis and BMWs and Audi. I mean, in its car class, Tesla, without placing a single ad, has outsold BMW, Audi, and Mercedes last quarter. And that is because the car is superior. It has nothing necessarily to do with that it's all green people, because
certainly.
I spoke at a Tesla conference a couple weeks ago, and the guy who picked me up at the airport in his Model S said, look, I'm not an environmentalist. I'm not going to lie to you and pretend that I'm some green guy, and that's why I bought a Model S. I bought it because I'm a tech geek, and simply the coolest tech gadget, you know, on the planet right now is a Tesla Model S, and that's why I bought it. So
they
reach people beyond, you know, the greeny tree hugger crowd.
Yes, well, that's the beauty of life today. You know, you look at all these young techie punks who at age 21 sell some kind of software for $1 billion, you know they're not going to be making bombs with that money. They're going to, this is the marriage of the tech world and the green world. So you don't have to pick some kind of a side. It's just going to happen more and more and more in a very natural way.
Yeah, I agree.
So also in this vein, you're coming to Colorado to speak at the Arise Festival in Loveland next week, and there's such a great feel surrounding this event. It's not just a music festival, which of course we all know have these sorts of things have been happening forever, but there are ideas and ideals and lifestyles being cast out and absorbed in the concert venue. And I'm wondering what you're seeing in your travels to give presentations.
You know, I'm doing actually two speeches when I'm in Colorado, so I'm a little disappointed. I'm only going to get to spend a couple of days at Arise on Friday and Saturday, but I'm speaking at a renewable energy conference in Aspen on Friday morning, right before I come to Arise. So I go to a lot of these green events and conferences, renewable energy, solar, wind, all that kind of stuff. And one of the main messages that I try to carry when I talk to that crowd is, you know, look, we've got to get outside of our little eco box and stop talking to each other, because I know that when I'm in Aspen, it's going to be a bunch of people that are already on board with the green movement. So essentially, I'm speaking to the choir. But I try to really get people out of their comfort zone and say, look, you know, if you really want to make a difference and you really want to move the needle and create change, you have to go out and speak to the people that don't agree with you. Because if we just run around you know, working with people who believe in the same things that we do, then who is going to change the minds of those who don't? And I found the Green Movement is starting to kind of get that and say, you know, you're right. I guess as long as we just go to these events where there's other greenies, you know, patting me on the back and saying, great job, Leilani, I don't feel like I'm making
right.
a huge difference. Yeah. I always feel like I'm making more of a difference when I'm, you know, at a NASCAR race or at a music festival like Arise, where I'm going to be speaking to people that maybe aren't super green, but they're there for the music.
Right. Well, in some way, it's like a contained protest. Do you know what I mean? A subdued protest. Everyone's there. They're listening to music. They're all green to a certain degree and certainly aware of all of that sort of thing. And just like you just mentioned, it's so important. How can this transition out happen to create the change without, you know, without that protest being cut out of the picture and maybe perhaps trying to make a protest obsolete by having another avenue? I don't know
right.
what that could be.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, and I'll go back to Tesla again, just because I feel like they're a great example of something that's sort of it's a green product that has transcended green. And I don't feel like people necessarily, like, say you're a normal person that's doesn't consider themselves a tree hugger or an environmentalist. If you can give them two equal products and say, look, you can either have this light bulb or you can have this light bulb. This light bulb is bad for the environment. It costs you the same amount as this light bulb, and the light isn't any better. I think that normal person that's not an environmentalist is going to choose the eco-friendly one, all other things being equal. That's how we have to get them on board. It's doing it for other reasons. So that's what I feel like the Green Movement has to concentrate on. We have to bring them things that they just look at as being the better product. And then, oh, it just so happens that they get some green credit on the street because they're driving an electric car, but that's not really the reason why they bought it. That's the key for us going and getting to the mainstream.
Awareness is one thing, and then it needs to sink in and make real change from within. Have you personally had some surprising shifts from your involvement in all of this?
Long before I began racing, I've always been a tree hugger, and I've been vegetarian since I was a kid, and I've always had that activist mentality in me. So for me, what's actually been more surprising is how much the race fans have come to embrace it. And I told you a bad story earlier about, you know, me getting trashed on the NASCAR forum because I was promoting an inconvenient truth. But I've also, on the other hand, had wonderful interactions with fans. We ran a clean energy race car a couple of years ago with this group of veterans that fight for clean energy on Capitol Hill. They're called Operation Free. And we were in Kansas Speedway, and we had 30,000 NASCAR fans come and sign up to get updates about the fight for clean energy. The veterans were kind of carrying it as a message of, look, our billion-dollar day habit on foreign oil is a national security threat. But I know that that group was really surprised at how many race fans embraced them and how many fans, you know, there's like 90,000 people at the track, 30,000 of them signed up for the clean energy stuff. That's a third of the crowd that was at the NASCAR race.
Well, if we've learned one thing today, it's to never underestimate a vegetarian hippie chick with a race car, Leilani Munter. She'll be in Loveland next week at the Arise Music Festival, along with some other great artists. For any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Podcasting on iTunes, it's Tributaries Radio. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.